Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told.
Wow, we have a lot to talk about this week in The Media Project, so we had better get underway.
Oh, yeah.
Which, by the way, is two words if you are copy editors out there. Underway is not a single word in AP style.
That's correct.
Isn't that interesting? The publisher, the editor, and the professor here, Ira Fussfeld, longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York, and other publications down that away.
Good day.
Good day, sir. The CEO of Northeast Public Radio, Dr. Ira, yes. Dr. Alan Shartok.
Whatever.
Whatever. And I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. Here we are to talk about a bunch of old guys to talk about old media. Here we are. It's a great thing, actually. These are big days for my line of work, for what I have done, newspapering. We have suddenly new ownership of the venerated Boston Globe and the venerable Washington Post. And that's a lot to
Or as they say on NPR, as the morning people say, Washington Post.
Washington.
Who put the R in Washington?
Cokie Roberts, I think, did. That's what they say down there.
Before we begin, you're right. These two major papers have been sold. And so newspapers are in a lot of trouble.
A lot of trouble. That sounds like good news. If somebody's buying newspapers, I don't know what that's a lot of trouble.
Well, no. They are because they got a lot less than they paid for them.
Oh, I see. Yes. So financially, they're in trouble.
Now, Rex, we'll just calm down.
As opposed to radio, which is thriving these days.
It is thriving. And I've been authorized by our board of trustees to offer you $125,000 for the Times Union.
You know what's interesting is that the size of a newspaper is not predictive anymore of its value.
Yeah, size doesn't matter.
It's so true because the bigger papers, many of them like the Boston Globe, are those that have been hurt the most by the decline in ad revenues because they depended on national ads that are no longer on in their pages. Papers the size of the Times Union or I think of Ira's Daily Freeman are...
We still got the Ford dealers.
But beyond that, I and others have been saying that the larger papers are more at risk for, among other reasons, the fact that their content is not as unique as the local papers. And so that the print life of a paper your size or my size may be extended by at least years, if not infinitely, than a New York Times or a Washington Post. There are just too many other places where you can learn about the presidency or Iraq.
Let me ask you both a question. It occurs to me, and I'm sure it's occurring to everybody who's listening, if two of the most venerable papers, the Boston Globe and the Washington Post, go south or get bought for very little money relative to what was paid for them, what's going on at the Times? I mean, they're selling the
Boston... At the Times?
Yeah, at the New York Times.
Uh-huh.
So in other words, I'm trying to take a look at at the way it's all going. Do either of you have any insights?
I think it's great news. I think that for the Times, this is... an opportunity to shed an asset that is not as productive in terms of cash flow as the major paper, as the New York Times, which is doing well.
Just to clarify, what you mean is that the Times sold the Boston Globe, which then shed the Times of that asset and also injected more money back into the bank for the New York Times, albeit much less than it paid for the Boston Globe.
Right, but Rex just answered my question, albeit not knowing he was answering my question, which you said it's doing well.
Well,
the New York Times is doing well.
I don't know that it's particularly doing well. Their advertising revenue is not doing well. They're boasting about their increased revenue in circulation, largely because of the paywall that they put up on the website. So, and again, I've repeating myself, I don't think that that's a good sign, because I don't know that they can sustain their business long term on circulation website paywall revenue. They need to keep and build their advertising revenue. So, you know, short term, that's fine. I think, but when you asked if we had any insight about whether the New York Times might be for sale.
Actually, I didn't say those words.
Well,
I just said, how are they doing?
How are they doing? Yeah. Well, I thought one of the things that struck me about the news of the Washington Post sale, beyond the obvious, was the sense of shock that was reflected in the staff and in the industry about the fact that the Washington Post was in fact sold by the Graham family, which held that paper for 80 years, and nobody saw it coming. Even within what's going on in this industry, the talks to sell the Washington Post were so hush-hush that nobody knew about it.
And were they existing, the Washington Post, on the Graham family on the cracker fortune? Or?
No.
Speaking of crackers, Alan, yeah. The $250 million, $250 million is not a lot of money to pay for a brand as powerful as the Washington Post, you might say.
Yeah.
But think about this. The guy who bought it, Jeff Bezos, the CEO of Amazon Inc., has opportunities with this to become a real content creator. The marriage of content, which Washington Post has, with the distribution network of Amazon.com is, I think, potentially very powerful.
Now, of course, they've gone out of their way to indicate, Bezos, that he was using his own piggy bank.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that $250 million, frankly, I'm not privy to his money. But I think it's probably the same thing as if you handed me a $5 bill.
Exactly.
So, I think it was. I think they said it was 1% of his worth.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Right.
So actually, I would hand you $5. I hand you less. But it's a right. Fortunately, but still, it's just because the shareholders. It's because Amazon is publicly traded, and the shareholders would have killed him if he had used their money to buy this. But I think he sees that there's some potential there, and it's the same difference. He controls Amazon. He will now have access to that content that he can distribute on his network.
And I remember famously Bezos a couple of years ago predicted the death of print within 20 years. Uh-huh. And now he is investing in print. But you're right. What is particularly interesting about this and hopeful for the Washington Post is on the hopeful side, he is injecting money into that company that the Grahams did not have. And although the Grahams said they could have continued running the paper, that they just saw the money drifting away. And so he's putting in money that was not there. And then the other thing, as Rex alluded to it, he's going to bring a fresh approach to that company and to the industry that precious few people in the industry have shown so far, and an exception, I believe, being the CEO of my company, which long ago said this is the way we're going to go, and it's digital first, and print is not going to last.
But it hasn't worked yet.
But it's got to start somewhere, and he's
I mean, I know you're being very nice to your old boss.
I think most people, even in the industry, recognize that Bezos is going to bring something to the Washington Post.
But what? Come on now. But what? If you read the New York Times, if you read the New York Times article on this, it was fascinating. It was a very good article. They went through a whole review of everything that has been done by the industry. Paywall, not paywall. And in the end, nothing has worked yet. So do we really think that Bezos can bring something to the game?
You're talking about the business side of things.
Well,
and of course,
right.
I just want to point out that if for most of us in this business, we don't do it for money. We come into it for journalism. And Washington Post still produces terrific journalism. I'll tell you a couple of things.
Whoa, I'm so sorry, Rex.
Yes.
But I just can't let that self-serving statement go that you don't do it for the money. Somebody does it for the money.
Right. You have to pay for the journalism.
Yeah.
That's true. But I just want to make the point that in your glee to say how awful things are in the newspaper industry, I think you should point out that it is the business side that is in trouble, that good journalism is still being produced.
To have the right of reply.
All right.
You say in your glee, and that's disgusting. I never was gleeful about this. In fact, I think newspapers are terribly important, and I'm very upset about the fact that they are going under.
Well, I feel better. Thank you.
No, I do. I want you to know that. I mean, I don't take any solace at all in this. I was interested in something you said before, which is that the smaller papers seem to have it a little bit better than the larger papers. And I was thinking about Warren Buffett. Now, didn't he make a decision to invest in smaller papers, even though he had a good deal of a chunk of change in one, at least one of these companies?
He, yes, he had a stake in the Washington Post company. But he's bought his hometown paper, the Omaha World Herald, which is a regional, a mid-sized paper. He has also bought a bunch of smaller papers.
Yeah.
And I think that in your the difficulty, one of the things that a lot of papers confronted is that the companies got over-leveraged in buying up a lot of newspapers. Companies borrowed money to buy the newspapers to create small chains. And it's that debt that has killed a lot of enterprises.
Why did they do that? In retrospect, at least, it looks pretty dumb, doesn't it?
Yes, I don't really know why they did that.
Well, they made bad decisions. I mean, historically,
yes, but based on what, Ira?
Because I'll have to use my former company as an example. I mean, our company was in an expansive mode. It had spent $280 million to buy the former Goodson Newspaper Group, which I was a part of, and that worked out
Goodson
pretty well.
Todman.
Yes, and that worked out pretty well. But then they spent $400 million to buy newspapers in Detroit right before the auto industry and the economy collapsed. So it was a bad decision, and it did not. It looked better on paper than it turned out to be. The timing was bad, and so that put our company in a hole that it has been since, and through two bankruptcies. But to your question about what is Bezos going to bring that others have not, the answer is we don't know. But what he does bring is the expertise and view of somebody who has not been in the industry.
I'll also say there are a couple other things, too, I'll tell you. He has this means of distribution of the product. If he wanted to, he could make the Washington Post the default app on every Kindle that he sells. He has the physical distribution. I mean, think about how Amazon ships things all over the place. He could do physical distribution as well, very effectively. Amazon has great content already. It has something called Business Insider that it's been very successful with. It has Amazon Publishing, which has put out hundreds of books under a number of different imprints. And the Post's website could be a major sales and distribution platform for his other products. So you could end up finding out that WashingtonPost.com or whatever they want to call it could be an e-commerce effort for him that could actually kick money back into the Washington Post.
So how does somebody like you, Rex, I mean, you're a senior guy now in terms of your, you're extremely well-placed, and you work for the very prestigious Hearst Corporation. What happens? I mean, do the Hearst people take a careful look at what's going on with these other guys?
Oh, I think so.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, you got to watch this and pay attention. I think Hearst, plus I know that Hearst looks at every property that comes on the market, and I would be very surprised. I have no inside information about this, let me say, but I'd be very surprised if the Grahams didn't contact Hearst to say, would you be interested in buying our paper, if they were quietly shopping around the Washington
Post. Well, apparently they did have many people who had an interest, as did the Globe. I think the Globe had, I think I read something like 10 people, or 10 different people, and I think the Globe was interested in selling to somebody, John Henry, who had a little baby. John Henry decided that he wanted it, and they probably had some streak of real decency about wanting somebody who could keep up the tradition, as opposed to
local ownership.
Yeah, as opposed to Dorothy Schiff, who sold to you know who, to Murdoch.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Now we don't know to what extent either John Henry, John Henry, we don't know to what extent, sorry.
Just couldn't, nicely done.
I couldn't help it. We don't know to what extent either he or Jeff Bezos might have had in the back of their minds that they want this because they want a platform, the way Rupert Murdoch wanted a platform. Well,
I think
to
that's
express
a big part
views.
Of it. I mean, and also, John Henry paid a relative paltry $70 million. Can you imagine that that's what that paper sold for after what the Times bought it for to begin with?
$1.1 billion. Plus, then they ended up also paying $300 million to buy the Worcester Telegram Gazette, which goes with it as well.
Yes. Yeah, but I think it's been said that Bezos, in particular, particular is interested in getting his a platform in Washington, where so much of the policy affecting his Amazon business regarding taxes and things of the like. So
that's interesting.
Yeah,
that's an interesting idea.
I was harking back to George Steinbrenner when he and when George Steinbrenner bought the Yankees, he always said he initially said he was going to be an absentee owner, and of course he proved not to be. Bezos is saying as of right now, I'm going to be in the other Washington, meaning Seattle, and he's keeping Catherine Weymouth as the publisher, and they're keeping Martin Baron as the editor. And the question is, well, isn't he going to get involved? He has to get involved because the Grahams have already admitted they don't know how to run this place going forward. So Bezos has got to get more involved. If he doesn't, then things are not going to get better.
That's very well put.
Well, unless he decides to run it not as a business but as a philanthropy, that is possible.
Sure. But they need his ideas. That's what has attracted them beyond his money.
Well, but if Rex is right and is seen as a look, some of these guys who make this much money, if it's only 5% or 1% of his fortune, they can use the tax write-off, can't they? Losing money.
Right. You know, what is interesting, too, is that what was excluded from the transaction is the Washington Post's digitally native Slate. Slate.com is not in it. Foreign Policy, which is a magazine they own.
Oh, yeah. But I tell you, we had a drugstore in Great Barrington named Melvin's Drugstore, and they had every magazine you ever saw. And there in Melvin's Drugstore on Main Street of Great Barrington was Foreign Policy magazine. I tell you, you couldn't get your copy. They were lined up as soon as the store opened when they came in.
So it's just, anyway, it's really surprising. I was encouraged by it just because when you see investment in the industry, it makes you think, well, somebody has an idea in mind here for what direction to go. And I think it's true that nobody really has an idea of how to preserve these great old brands.
Sure.
But we're all trying different things to see if we can make a business out of what is clearly just such a revolutionarily changing, that's not a good way to phrase it, but everything is changing so quickly that people are trying to figure it out. And I figure if somebody with the smarts and the resources of Jeff Bezos is investing in newspapering, this is a good thing.
Look, there's another way to look at all of this. You don't get to live forever. None of us do. And, you know, if you got all that money, you can't take it with you. They're not going to put it in the coffin with you when you eventually go. If you get a chance to buy the Boston Globe or the Washington Post, why not just scoop it up?
Only except these guys pretty much all have egos. And if Bezos, who's the first paragraph of Bezos's obituary is going to be how he invented this giantly successful Amazon.com.
But also invented something, a way to take it with him.
What I was going to say is that he does not want the second sentence of that obit to say he also purchased the Washington Post and oversaw its demise.
Yeah.
So he may have an ego and he may have all these good reasons, but he wants to get something done here because he doesn't want this on his resume.
Well, you're very smart, right? And I defer to you.
And see what the next
and
chapter
smart
is.
Too.
And you're smart too. This is why it's really good for you folks to listen to this program. A bunch of smart old guys talking about old media. Actually, the next chapter will be what happens to those 8 Tribune papers, including the Los Angeles Times, the Koch brothers are interested. Koch brothers are interested in.
Koch.
Whatever.
And
Eli Broad, they're both interested in the L.A. Times as well as all those other Chicago Tribune and
the
other Kochs
papers. Sure, the Kochs and the
Broads. And so this is, we don't know exactly what's going to happen there. It'll be really interesting to see what the next chapter is. So you can follow that all here, folks, on The Media Project. Ira Fussfeld, Alan Chartok, and Rex Smith here joining you from lovely Albany, New York, offering you our commentary, analysis, and even a little bit of insight into the media issues of the week.
I have to say one thing, and that is we all make mistakes. Everybody does. We shouldn't be seen as, I shouldn't be seen as, because I know that at one point we bought an AM radio station for the right price. I'm not going to say where. And it turned out to be a real dog. We had to spend a fortune fixing it up. Huh. You know, unlike FMs, which are one tower and modern and the rest of it, the AMs often have 4 or 5 towers, and they all have to be kept up, and the site has to be kept up. We got rid of it, and we took a loss, I got to tell you.
It's interesting. What do you know?
I thought I should admit that.
Speaking of getting rid of, just the continuing saga of downsizing, Gannett is the largest company publishing newspapers in the U.S. that has the most let me see if I'm saying this right. It is the most newspapers. I think they have 86 American newspapers. Yeah. That's not the most anymore, is it?
Well, I don't know. All I know is my company is second.
Anyway, so Gannett had about 300 more layoffs over the past week, including eliminating 11% of the jobs at the newspaper in Westchester and Rockland counties, the Journal News, which is based in White Plains. So interesting to note that of the they got rid of 26 jobs there, dropping their total to 206. And I think of those 26, 17 of them are in the newsroom. So,
but Rex, we have spent a lot of time on this program over the years, and one section of the program is how many people are left being laid off at Gannett. So this is nothing new. Look, every newspaper has it. I got to tell you, guys, I have two apps on my phone. One of them is Murdoch and the Wall Street Journal, because somebody told me the Wall Street Journal is a great paper. So I put it on, and I have right next to it the New York Times. And I get up in the middle of the night, and I read both of them. Well, you know, the Wall Street Journal may be a great paper, but it can't kiss the toes of the New York Times when it comes to comprehensive news. People say, well, the editorial policy isn't that good, but the news is good. I got to tell you, I don't see it.
You know, part of that is, don't you think it partly could be because you've been reading the Times for a lot longer than the Wall Street Journal, and you're comfortable with it? We in the newspaper business depend upon people growing comfortable with our product and liking it. People who say, you know, WAMC is the greatest radio station in the world.
Sure.
Maybe they haven't listened to, you know, BBC.
Oh, no, they always say, here's what they always say. I've traveled all over the United States. I've heard 100 public radio stations. And WAMC is far and away the best radio station I have ever listened to, not only in the country, but in the world.
This product is brought to you by. Absolutely. Speaking of the best.
So your effort, Mr. Rex Smith, to put us down didn't go unappreciated.
Princeton Review actually does these funny surveys of colleges, and they came out with the best college newspaper. Every year they have a list of what is the best. And I just think it's worth noting that the number one college newspaper this year is the Cornell Daily Sun in upstate New York. Number two is the Yale Daily News. And down there somewhere is the number 10 is the Daily Gamecock of the University of South Carolina. That's a funny name, isn't it?
Now, how about the Crimson?
The Oracle is not on there from SUNY New Paltz.
I'm afraid it's not. Independent Florida Alligator is, however. So there you go, an independent alligator, not just any alligator. So if you whatever they may be alleging, if they are if they are alleging things, then they would be the alligator as opposed to the alleged. Yes.
Maybe you two guys know this. Alan runs the Legislative Gazette, which is a product that's SUNY New Paltz product. Do the college newspapers still go the traditional way, or are they printing web editions? And
the Legislative Gazette, as I mentioned, I think last week, is online only in the summer, and that saved us a lot of money.
They generally do all of the above, but I was talking to a couple of students who had been editors of the newspapers at USC, University of Southern California, and they say the students actually prefer to be able to pick up a hard copy. It is interesting, though they do the digital stuff, the students like getting their own newspaper.
Makes sense.
Interesting thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
wrap
absolutely.
Your fish.
Speaking of changing times, NewsHour has appointed female co-anchors. Gwen Ifill and Judy Woodruff will take over what used to be the McNeil-Lehrer NewsHour. Uh-huh. Isn't that interesting? This is just another milestone for women on television and journalism. 7 years after Katie Couric became the first female solo anchor. And we remember all those years ago when Barbara Walters was rather unhappily paired with
Harry Reasoner, who bullied her out.
Amazing. Yeah. Hard to believe.
To believe that that nice Harry Reasoner bullied anybody like Barbara Walters.
Well, she's had many more last laughs.
I'm afraid so.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting to note that there was a time, you know, we're old enough to remember when in radio and television, women, it sounded odd to have women's voices on the air.
Sure.
And now, of course, they are moving into leadership positions. And finally here today, the Republican National Committee has threatened to pull NBC and CNN out of access to the 2016 Republican primary debates because they have film projects related to Hillary Clinton in the works.
Yeah. God help anybody who wants to do what they look and say, who's the most interesting people in the country? And somebody says, Hillary Clinton. Say, good, we'll do a feature on her. Oh, well, that's not right. You can't do one about Hillary Clinton. We're going to kick you right out of this or that. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, CNN is doing a documentary, as one would think a news network would do, and presumably will do with the Republicans as somebody steps forward. NBC, it's their entertainment division, is doing a miniseries, and the Republicans are trying to link this supposed bias from the news side, MSNBC in particular. What I thought was particularly interesting is that this is a publicly stated threat to these guys. These are the kinds of threats that the three of us get all the time. You do that, we're going to pull our advertising.
Right.
And these they have no shame. Oh, yeah, you do this, we're going to pull the coverage of the debates from your network.
To which I say,
go
a
ahead.
Bully is a bully is a bully is a bully.
And with that, the program separates itself from your earwaves. Yes, through the airwaves from your earbuds, whatever.
Not a moment too soon.
Thanks for joining us on The Media Project.
Advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.